Welcome to The Quarantine Tapes, a daily podcast from Onassis, LA and Dublin. Hosted by Paul Holdengraber, this series chronicles shifting paradigms in the era of social distancing.
Greetings. This is Paul Holdengraber, your host for The Quarantine Tapes, brought to you by Onassis, LA and Dublin. I am thrilled to announce that we have asked various former Quarantine Tapes guests to host, during a week, guests of their choice in total freedom. They have absolute carte blanche. This week I have asked the wonderful writer Walter Mosley to serve as our guide and guest host. I do hope you will enjoy Mosley's choices for this week on The Quarantine Tapes. Thank you so much for listening.
Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
Walter, I am tremendous. How are you doing? That's the question.
You know, I'm okay. I'm here in Santa Monica. I think there's an ocean out the window somewhere, but I'm completely socked in with fog.
Oh, wow.
I'm surrounded by all the projects that I haven't finished yet. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I'll get somewhere. So that's being alive. So I'm not upset.
I'm sure that you will, Walter. I'm sure that you will. And I'm just thinking how wonderful it is to be socked in by fog, knowing that there's an ocean there.
That's right.
You know that there's an ocean there, you know?
So it's like knowing that your mother's definitely someplace else in the house.
Yeah. Because it's like you're not in the ocean socked in by fog. You're actually on dry land and the ocean is there somewhere, you know?
I just want to say that, you know, Paul Holdengraber is the one who usually engages in conversation with the guests of the Quarantine Tapes podcast. But he's given me the reins for a week and asked me to invite whoever I would. Of course, I ask you, Paul Coates.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm.
You have been a Black Panther, a political activist, the father of seven children, and the editor-in-chief and CEO of Black Classic Press, the second oldest independent Black publishing house in America. You are a writer, a reader, and truly a survivor of the American experience. Most Americans in my lifetime have taken our exceptional bounty for granted, but there are some of us who know, who live with the reality that it all might be washed away in an instant. You know, as I do, that the land of milk and honey might overnight turn into a life sentence of solitary confinement, subsisting on bread and water. Your experience of otherness in this nation allows me to enter into a dialogue about something that's close to my heart. That is, can there be hope, even optimism, when so much has gone wrong? We are experiencing a pandemic in which hundreds of thousands have died. Millions have suffered through the infection. Of the survivors and those who haven't gotten sick, many are out of work and blocked from seeking succor in the company of others. This pandemic is not only the virus, but also the struggle for racial equality. And along with that, we are living through extraordinary political upheaval where most citizens feel that they have to get involved. I believe that in the end, our greatest defense is hope. From enslavement to the senatorship of Georgia, from being a disenfranchised gender in 1919 to becoming vice president of the United States. In order to achieve these things, we must have hope. And in order to have hope, we must have at least an iota of optimism. That's what I'd like to ask you today. Do you see any hope, any optimism we can garner in these trying times?
Walter, you set that up so wonderful. I mean, you really, really did. And when you talk about, when you talk about hope, of course, hope to me is such a powerful word and such a powerful notion, I probably should say. And then you talk about, in order to accomplish whatever it is we're doing, we have to have hope and we have to have an iota of optimism. Walter, it's very, very heavy because I'm not a person that subscribes to, in total, the prescription that you just laid out. I don't subscribe to it. Although I believe what you're saying is true, mm-hmm. I believe that in order to go forward, there is often and has to be some idea of hope. I believe that. At the same time, Walter, when it comes to thinking about like what's happening today, I can hope all day long. But on the other side of it, is this fascist. I mean, this real, real fascist that, you know, you're in California, I'm in Washington today, and a few blocks away from me is a group of people who the president has called to this city to disrupt everything. Now, I can hope, but hope is like believing in something. And what do I have to base that on, Walter? I have to base it on what? Historical precedent? I mean, it's almost like it's hope against hope or something. Because if I look at what I'm going to be optimistic about, I have to have a reason for being optimistic. And that reason doesn't exist unless I look back at the past. It's not in the future. It's in the past somewhere, I guess. Walter, your question and how you set it up causes me to go in places that I don't usually go, man. So that's why I say the setup is heavy. But hope, the whole notion of hope, Walter, the whole notion of optimism, what has always got me about hope is positive. You're positive if you have hope. Well, I just want to say, if you look at the opposite of hope, if you look at the opposite of optimism, everything becomes negative. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. You could have doubts, couldn't you? You know, I mean, you could have doubts that could block hope. And would that be as negative? So I'm more in the doubter camp, Walter. I'm over there on that side. I'm just saying, I don't know, Walter. I don't know about having hope on this thing. I don't know about being optimistic. I'm saying it could go either way, man, you know?
Well, no, certainly. Hope doesn't preclude things going wrong. Hope doesn't preclude going from milk and honey to bread and water. Well, you know, hope is, you know, sitting in the white part of the bus and saying, I'm not moving because I paid for this bus. So I get to sit where I want to sit. You know, and now who knows what's going to happen? You know, I when I think of you, Paul, I think of, you know, your beautiful children. Mm-hmm. You know, all grown up and everything. And then your beautiful grandchildren. I don't think you don't have great grandchildren yet, do you?
Not yet, Walter, not yet. But I hope I do. I'm like, optimistic about that. I'm just kidding. Well,
you know, no, but that's part of, you know, the way, you know, that I'm thinking about it. I'm looking at it. Yeah. I look at, you know, I mean, you know, your children are all wonderful. One of them is, you know, well-known around America and the world, really, Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yes.
You know, he's one of the most successful writers in America today. Not only is he successful, not only is he, you know, writing books, but he's also doing what he believes in. Mm-hmm. He's been able to, you know, using you and also, you know, himself, his education as a jump off point, has been able to speak the truth as much as he can.
Sure.
To a nation that at one time would never even be able to listen to his truth. You know, even in the raising of a child, even though that child, you know, could be dead tomorrow, you can have hope, right?
Walter, you can have hope. I don't question that you can't have hope. What I'm questioning is that space that's in between hope and that space that's in between doubt. And what I guess I'm raising to you is that I'm in that questioning space of doubt less than I am in that space of hope. So this is a really great conversation. Because I think, as I think about it, it also is probably a problem with Western language. Western language doesn't give us that space in between. Either you hope and you're optimistic or you're pessimistic. You know, it's like there's a clear, either white or black, there's no gray in between it. And I guess what I'm saying to you, what I claim about all of this, and even the idea of the pandemic that we're experiencing now, even the notion of that other pandemic Donald Trump that we're experiencing now, is that I don't know how that stuff is going to work out. And I'm not claiming hope in it. I'm claiming that it might go okay. You know, it might go okay.
Well, you know? Paul, I accept might go okay as hope. Because, and the opposite is, no, man, let's just get our guns and get out there because you know it ain't going to happen. You know what they're going to do.
Well, see, Walter, I'm asking, where is that space that's in between those two?
Let me say, I'll give you an example of what I'm thinking. You know, there's a boxer named Mike Weaver, a heavyweight yes. boxer, had a left hook.
Yes.
That's all he had, left hook. And he fought this guy who was world champion called Tate. Tate was one of the greatest boxers. He yes. could really box. He didn't have a punch at all. And it was back in the day when it was 15 rounds. And they fought through 14. And Tate just beat Mike Weaver. Mm-hmm. For 14 rounds, just kept hitting and beating him. Weaver throw that left hook, throw that left, miss. Then somewhere in the middle of the 15th round, Weaver threw a left hook and he hit Tate and he knocked him out.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mike Weaver, against all odds, became the world champion.
Yes.
Now, while he was fighting, if you said, "Are you going to win this fight?" He would have said, "Well, I don't know, man. All I know is I'm going to go out there and throw my left hook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna throw it 1,000 times. All I need is to hit him once, you know?" Now,
right.
There's no certainty in hope, but hope is why he kept trying, right? You keep trying.
I'm like probably close to Mike Weaver. And my training says that, you know, again, I'm probably in that space more of hope against hope, Walter. My training says I have to keep going on, hope or no hope, against hope. I have to keep moving because that's all I can do. That's a little bit different than saying, "Well, I hope when I go out, I'm going to throw that left hook." It's saying, "Look, I've got an option. I can lay down now and forget it, or I can keep moving in the direction that I think best." Now, where does hope fit into that one, Walter? I don't know. But what I'm saying is I wouldn't describe my continuing struggle as a struggle because of hope. And I wonder, you know, I was listening to that thing on Mike Weaver. I was wondering how he felt. What was he hopeful that he was going to knock the guy out? Or did his training kick in and his training said, "You got to keep throwing that left hook. You got to keep throwing that left hook." And this is a question for you. I don't know, Walter. And this is why your discussion and even my responses to you, it's not like I've sat down and thought about how to respond to this, but yeah. Your questions provoke these thoughts and these responses.
I think I understand where you're coming from, you know, the semantics of where you're coming from even. Like, for instance, when you were the head of the Black Panthers in the 60s in Baltimore, just before you took over that position, two of the members of your organization were arrested and charged with a double murder of policemen. And they were both, you know, convicted and sentenced to prison. And one of them you were very close to, and you were very certain that he hadn't committed the crime. And you spent over 40 years trying to get him out of prison. Was there And finally you succeeded, and now he's out and he's living an interesting life and he's writing, you and him wrote a book together. Is there any hope involved in getting up every day for 40, 42, 44 years working to get somebody out of prison when you know everything is stacked against you?
Walter, just for context, this would have been the early 70s in Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
The
fine.
Person, yeah. I mean, your facts are correct. The person you're talking about is Marshall Eddie Conway, who was part of a number of other Panthers who were incarcerated and stacked up against charges. We still have Panthers in jail now who I'm convinced should not be there because of the charges against them. In Eddie's case, I have to be, it's sad, Walter, because at times there was cause for hope. At times there were. Mm-hmm. And particularly when he first went in, because we didn't believe he would ever be convicted. We thought the charges were that weak and that manufactured that he wouldn't be convicted. And so I think there we were hopeful that the jury would see through this and all like that. That hope faded. So I guess to answer your question, there were periods of hope, but most of those periods, most of that time, Walter, that 44 years that Eddie was in jail, most of that time was dashed up against the thought that he's never going to get out. But I could never share that with him.
Or anyone else. I never heard you say that.
Anyone else, yeah. Or anyone else. I had to display optimism, especially with him. But the truth of the matter, when we met with the lawyers, the thought of I don't know dominated as opposed to hope. And what we did was, we did, like you said, Mike Weaver did. We kept slugging. We kept throwing things up against the wall to see what would stick. Mm-hmm. Even when he got out, it wasn't because we threw the right punch. It was because circumstances had shifted. And the circumstances around his case was that the conviction, the way it was done, it was an illegal conviction. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, the display of hope was there. Yes, optimism was there. But honestly, personally, Walter, most days, the majority of days, there was the acceptance that we were not going to win, but we had to keep moving. We had to keep moving this along.
And I guess what I'm trying to, what I'm, how I'm hearing that is that that is hope. He said, "Are you? Can you win this?" He said, "Well, if you look at all the elements, no." So, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to keep throwing my left hook.
And see, maybe that's where I'm running up against a wall, because I'm thinking that hope means the belief that something is going to happen, and generally it's going to be positive to how you believe it's going to happen. So I'm looking at hope as something of a belief in an outcome that you're predicting as positive. And see, when I look at it in that context, that's why I'm saying that I don't know that I can say that the outcome tomorrow is going to be positive. You know, like Raphael Warnock was just elected senator, right?
Yeah.
Now, I think there is some hope there that things will be better than what it was with Perdue and those other folks being senators. I believe that I've got some hope about that, Walter, but it's marginal at best. You know, I feel that black folks and poor people, white people are still in for a hard ride.
But you know, Paul, yes. And I want to thank you for helping me hone down the definition that, you know, you have hope that you're going to make it. You have hope that, you know, I mean, against what I said, well, you know, what are your odds? Well, about 1,000 to 1.
Yeah.
Well, what is this? Well, you know, I mean, I might not get there. You know, I mean, it's Martin Luther King. I might not get there with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's going to be beautiful on the other side of that mountain. That's hope. And it's the black Jesus kind of hope. It's not the white Jesus kind of hope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The black Jesus said, man, this is going to be hard. What we're doing is going to be hard. And, you know, I would like not to die, but I think I'm going to. Yeah.
You know, like when you said 1,000 to 1, that sounded to me like I heard one of your characters, right? Like I could see you writing a character and the odds against him are 1,000 to 1 mm-hmm. that he's going to survive. And so it gives me the opportunity to just ask you, who do you think is the least hopeful of your characters? The characters, all the many characters you've written, who do you think is the least hopeful?
Oh my God.
Or do you think they all have some form of hope going on?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think that, you know, and you're still in living hard lives, you know?
Yeah.
You still might be killed. I mean, my book Black Betty, I think covers that the best, because her life is so hard that she won't even be granted death.
Mm.
You know, that's the hardest thing. You say, no, you're going to have to live through this, you know? But I think that that we become hopeful. I'm hopeful right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't promise that things are going to turn out right. I can't, you know, promise that the Congress isn't going to betray us. I can't do anything like that. But I can say I keep working toward what's positive. And you know, what's so interesting about it, yes, having this conversation with you, is you're the one who taught me this. You know, you worked at that publishing house of yours, Black Classic Press, all those children that you raise and kind of intermingle, you know, your life in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yeah, it probably is like you're saying, though. It's like 1,000 to 1. The odds are, I don't know how this is going to work out, you know? Yeah. But I've got to keep moving. In that sense of hope, yes, because that's how I see my life and that's how I see things going. Contemplatively, though, laying out the future and saying, well, hey, the arc of justice is long and it bends toward freedom. You know, one.
I'm not trying to say that. The arc of justice might crash on the side of the mountain.
yeah, because historically, that's what has happened. Now you can look and talk about that arc of justice being, long and bending in our favor and stuff like that. But you know, it carries me back. You know, would someone say the arc of justice has been in favor of the Native Americans? You know. Would there be a thought of a positive outcome? How does the outcome, how do you have hope for a positive outcome? And I'm not saying I can't speak for Native Americans, but sure. I'm saying the injustices have been stacked so hard. How do you get a positive outcome? See, again, it's one of the situations for me of hoping against hope.
And you're right about that. I mean, you're right about that. You know, we can talk about Native Americans. We can talk about Africans in the belly of a slave ship.
Yeah.
Coming across the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, there's a struggle that goes beyond the life of individuals, you know, and that's Martin Luther King. He said, well, I might not get there with you. He didn't mean might not. He said, I know I'm not going to get there with you. It's people who say, this is hard. I can't see how I'm going to win, but I can't see how I'm going to fight, I'm going to struggle.
Yes.
I'm going to try my best to make it.
Yes.
I mean, we have a country today. It's hard because people don't, it's not pushed up against their face, but you know, 300,000 people are dead.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, well, you know, do they have any hope? No, they died, but you know, they struggle to live the whole time. You know, can we struggle? Can we make it? If you're going to be Native American, you know, on the North American continent, if you're going to be Jews in the Holocaust, it's a struggle that you probably won't win, but you try. And, you know, listen, I'm not trying to answer the question for you. I'm not saying, so you should say this.
Right. Saying, I don't get that.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like this is what the way I see the world. You know, I see a world where there's possibility, you know, there's possibility. And if we work with that possibility, we might get something. We might not. I mean, that's what I call hope. It does kind of sound like we're saying the same thing. Maybe not. But
No, Walter, we're closer. We are closer than we're not. See, for me, again, I'm dealing with my understanding of hope, right? Mm-hmm. What we're talking about does have some of that mixed in, but it's not based on the belief that we're going to succeed or the belief that this
absolutely
is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is rooted in the fact that we know that if we don't struggle, then we've given up and all is lost.
Yes.
If we struggle, we might possibly survive.
Yeah. Or somebody might.
Or somebody might. That's really what it is. Is the word for that hope. If it is, okay, it's just hard for me. If it isn't, I'm looking for that word. I'm looking for the expanse of language that allows that in-between place to be there. In other words, what we've said is not, and what you and I are coming together on, is not based on that rosy thing of, hey, we're going to get out of this, and I believe that the world is going to be all of this and all that. No, but what choice do you have but to go on and find out what's on the other side of struggle?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are pretty much saying the same thing. I'm calling for that word, and I don't have that word. That's all. But I know it isn't pessimistic because I'm not pessimistic. Mm-hmm. I know it isn't dark or foreboding. All of those negative definitions that come up as opposites of optimism, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where I am. And I appreciate you really for kicking this off and giving me an opportunity to think about these things. Because I'm usually thinking about, I'm going to survive. I'm going to struggle. But not the intellectual basis of it.
So I'm going to survive is something that, you know, I can't say because I don't know.
That's true. That's true.
But I'm going to struggle, you know, and then I'm going to believe, you know, it's like during COVID, I have some friends who are just like, they're going crazy. They're sitting there and say, oh my God, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. I hate it. You know, I have other friends saying, wow, man, I finally got to finish that book of poems I was writing. And it just seems like there are things that we can do that we can hope for in the face of, you know, almost insurmountable odds. I don't have a job. I don't have no money. I can't go out of my house. You know, the odds are gigantic, but it seems a possibility that I can make something. I mean, we had COVID, but we also had, you know, Black Lives Matter. People are out saying, well, no, Black Lives Matter. And a lot of people are saying, no, don't say that. Don't say that because it might get in the way of our political goals. I said, listen, if I can't say Black Lives Matter, our political goals are already out the window.
Right.
You know, right. And you think, wow. And I guess that's what I call hope. And I understand what you're saying. There's a kind of a positive patina kind of pasted onto hope that maybe the word itself doesn't mean.
Yes. Yes.
Hope
yes.
doesn't promise that you're going to succeed.
Okay.
Hope just says, okay, I'm going to keep on trying. I'm going to keep throwing that left hook and maybe it's going to land and maybe it's not going to land. But at the end of it, even if I lose, I kept throwing that left hook the whole time.
Right, right.
I was out there. I had one weapon and I used it. And, you know, that's what you want from, you know, people. I don't want to, I'm not trying to politicize it. I'm just trying to say, hey, you know.
I think there, Walter, we are absolutely in agreement. I'm in that space. And again, I really appreciate the opportunity to explore this and flesh this out. Not that we have a final solution to it, but I think I see it a lot clearer, you know, really.
Well, that's really wonderful. I mean, in my experience, you're one of the models I have for life.
Well, Walter, I appreciate that. But can I take you back? Because I wanted to ask you this came up.
Yeah,
I'm going back to your writing because it's stuck with me. I just didn't want to disrupt the conversation. Mm-hmm. What is Easy Rawlins, a character that probably most of our listeners are familiar with? What is Easy Rawlins hopeful for? What is he hopeful for?
You know, I think Easy Rawlins wants the American dream.
Hmm.
Children, a home, a job that he can make money at. Living his own truth and his own dignity. That's what he wants.
I would agree. That sounds like him.
Yeah.
Now, does he hope for it though? I mean, because he wants it, because I was trying to weigh this around in my head. I don't know that he goes out every morning and say, I hope I get this family. I hope I get these. He lives his life.
No, it's not I hope. I'm going to do my damnedest to have this reality.
Uh-huh.
Is it? That's what he says. And that's hope, I think.
You I'm think that's hope. Okay.
To have it. It's an active. It's not passive. Well, I hope that rock doesn't fall on my head. It's not that. It's that thing. It said, uh-oh, man, let's get away from this rock here because it might hit me in the head, you know? And, you know, and Easy might even say, he'll help you get out before he gets out.
Got it.
You know? But even that, even if he failed, I mean, no, he succeeds in getting you out, but he, you know, in turn dies, he would have seen that as success. He said, I did what I could.
Right.
And I think that's another part of hope. It's like, you know, I mean, all we can do is hope. I mean, and it's actually in that way, very Christian concept.
It is.
Try your best.
It has this spiritual note to it because, you know, belief itself, even believing in a force other than those forces and those senses that you can touch, feel, and smell, has this belief in the other. And belief in the other is beyond me. And if I believe in the other has always treated me good, gave me life and all this kind of stuff. So I can believe that the other has a plan for me. So I see those as connected. Now, you say Christian. I see it as, I guess I see it present in most of the quote-unquote religions, you know? Mm-hmm. I certainly see it present in Islam. But I do see it present and related. But, of course, those are the people who also wrote the dictionary. I mean, you know, and wrote the definitions, you know, I mean, so that's, I'm railing, that's one of the things I'm railing against, right?
Because yeah, well, you know, but the idea of taking their language and making it our own is a big part of American history.
Yes.
People say, okay, I'm going to take what you got, but I'm going to make something else out of it. You know, I think that's another way to look at this. As long as I have hope, the ball is in my court. You know, I'm not giving up to these people. You know, I think of people like one of the great American heroes, political heroes, is Medgar Evers.
Okay.
Medgar Evers said, no, man, I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to live in my house. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to do what's right because I know what's right. You know, and you think, you know, I look at Medgar Evers and say, man, if I was you, I would have moved to Montreal in a minute. Moved to Montreal, I'd be gone from there. You know, but he didn't.
Right.
And he didn't for me, not because he had hope in himself, but he had hope in me and in you and all these other people. And I'm, you know, and I feel so, you know, and I feel it now. I'm watching, you know, I'm watching our politics, which, you know, one side wins and other side loses. But the fact that everybody knows, everybody's a part of it, I think, you know, is wonderful. I look at Black Lives Matter. You know, when I was a kid, you know, when Black people got out on the streets, they got mad about what happened. It was only Black people. Now I see all these, you know, white people, Asian people, Mexicans. I mean, they're out there.
Sure.
And
sure.
Black Lives Matter. I say, wow, man. What so many people, Medgar and all those other people worked for so long is coming to fruition. And it's coming to fruition because they kept working in spite of the odds. And I, you know, and I know that, I know that's part of your life. Whether or not you want to agree with me, my semantics, I know that that's something you think because—
Walter, I'm listening to you and I'm hoping to agree with you, okay? Like I really am. I'm like saying, oh yeah, I agree with that. Wait a minute. No, because you know, I look at Megger and I know that a part of him, he lived his life. And so many of those Black folks, white folks, and whoever on the cause of the justice side who sacrificed themselves.
Yeah.
So many of them, I'm sure they looked at and they thought about the generations to come. Because, I mean, how can you not? But on the other hand, they were thinking in the present time that they're not going to take this stuff. You're not going to do that to me. You know what I mean? You are not going to tell me that I have to go to Montreal. You're just not going to do that. So there is that present time reaction to the oppression. Certainly there was there for me. It's that present time reaction. And there is that consideration of the future also. I know in my case, Walter, I was young. And so the future was so far off. You know, I thought about generations to come, but I didn't think about them like I think about now. I'm closer to seeing those generations now. And so I wonder about Medgar Evers too. I wonder about other people who sacrifices. It's good and noble to say that Megger sacrificed for you, but I'm sure Megger was peeved every day that he had to be confronted by somebody who tells him where to stand and where not to stand.
I agree with you. I don't think it was about me. It turned out to be a gift to me.
But got it. Yes.
No, listen, man. I ain't gonna accept this. I bet you if I walk up to Megger and say, man, I can't stand this stuff no more. I gotta go meet to Toronto, man. I gotta go.
Yeah.
And he would say, listen, brother, I understand.
Yeah.
You need to go.
Right.
Right. I, on the other hand, need to stay.
That's right. That's right.
That's hard truth hope. It's not simple, you know. I'm hoping for this, but until that happens, I'll have that. It's not that, you know.
Yeah. So Walter, maybe that's what's needed. A separation. A distinction inside of hope, because you just said That's hard truth hope there, okay? Yeah. So maybe if those distinctions were inside of hope, as opposed to lumping it all together.
Yeah, no, I think so.
It's a
big word, hope. It takes up a whole bunch of terrain. You know, hoping already means you're in a hard place. If I have to hope, that means I'm in a hard place. I said, well, I hope it works. You know, it's like, oh God, man, you hope it works. Anyway, Paul, that's pretty much our time. And listen, thank you so much for doing this.
I really enjoyed it. And yeah. It's great that you get an opportunity to explore like this. And so thank you so much, Walter. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good and great one and a hopeful day, Walter.
Okay. You too, Mr. Coates.
All right. Thank you.
To support this show and DubLab's progressive programming, go to dublab.com/support.